To quote Homer Simpson, that can lead to some dizzying highs and terrifying lows.
Seen from them do last year, and what I think we'll see them do this year, they'll eat money if it means getting a better return.
He taught me a brand new phrase.
Yes, he did. I figured I would leave it for you.
And welcome to Artificial Turf Wars, episode number 106, where we're still waiting on our all-star vote tallies. I'm your host, Greg Wisniewski. I won't even tell you what position I'm an all-star at. And I am joined tonight by Josh Housam. Josh?
I guess I can't get all-star votes because I'm a pitcher.
Oh, that sucks, man. And we are also, of course, joined by Nick Dyka, who I assume is a shortstop.
Back in high school.
Yeah,
like everyone else.
Exactly, everybody's a shortstop at some point, if you aren't a left fielder like I was. But anyway, we're here to talk not about our illustrious careers, we're here to talk about this week in what happened with the Blue Jays. So all of that sweeping that the Blue Jays were doing, getting swept as well, that ended today with a win over the Braves after a loss to the Braves, but it was a good week overall, so we're gonna go into that a bit, where we made the Nationals look bad. We got Marco Estrada, who keeps improving. We have Randall Grichuk, who came back totally to life in the last couple weeks, so he's worth a few minutes of our time. Marcus Stroman will be coming back, hasn't quite yet, but we've got a date set for that. And we've got trade talk, lots and lots of trade talk, because ultimately I think we're going to find out that we all think the Jays should be trading some people away in preparation for next year. We have your questions, and then we're going to award something new. We'll leave that for a surprise for later. So we shall begin, Josh. How did you feel after a weekend sweeping the Nationals? Was that at all expected from you?
Was it expected? I mean, if you listen to our podcast last week, you threw odds on the no hitter from Max Scherzer?
Yes, I did.
So no, it was not expected, but it was fun to see. They beat, and there were legitimate wins, all three of them. A team that's supposed to be a playoff team, so it was kind of fun. It hadn't happened much this year.
Yeah, it was kind of weird because in that Scherzer game, it really was a pitching duel in a lot of ways, which I was like, okay, that's like the opposite of what I was expecting. And the Blue Jays have proven that they don't, that doesn't set any precedent. They went and got killed by the Braves in the first game against them. So what do we make of it? Is there anything to draw from that, Nick?
Well, I mean, I think the thing to draw from it is that it's just entertaining baseball. And I think you're right that, they did get killed by the Braves. And I don't think it means that the season is on the precipice of turning around or anything like that. But it's just better as a fan of even a struggling team to watch good baseball games as opposed to, blowout games like the one last night against Atlanta.
Indeed. The sweep streak was kind of a weird thing. Get swept by New York, sweep Baltimore, get swept by
Tampa,
and then sweep the Nationals. I don't remember that sequence of getting swept and being swept regardless in maybe the last 10 years of watching the Blue Jays. Anything like that?
Oh, it was bizarre. I don't think you'll find that with most teams. It's that weird up and down. But I think it's just the flukiness of baseball. And I don't think we're going to see it again this season, or at least I hope not, because it's really strange.
It's a bit too much. We get to say nice things about Marco Estrada again in that mix, which is all right. So what nice things would you like to focus on, Josh?
It's funny. So last week we were talking about Marco Estrada's rise coming back in his previous two starts. It went away again in the start against Washington. It was under 12 inches and he absolutely dominated the Nats. And one of the big things he was doing in that game was he was throwing a lot more breaking balls. So I think that what we might be seeing at this, you know, again, this is something we have to see a few more starts to see if it's a true trend, but when he has his big time fastball, you know, the one we're talking about with the high rise and the one that gets all those pop-ups, he's going to throw more of the four seamer, which he did against Baltimore, or he threw more cutters against the Yankees. But when he gets in these situations where it's not there, he'll go to more breaking balls because, you know, to counteract it. And I think that that's kind of neat that they did something like that. It's like, oh, he doesn't have that today, let's go to something else.
Do you think that's something that that he can feel, or would you guess that that's something that the catcher might be coming out to him between innings and saying, look, man, when I'm trying to get it, it doesn't have that action on it that you think it has?
I don't think there's even a conversation, because just from what Marco Estrada has said to me personally, he doesn't have anything to do with his pitch mix. He just throws whatever the catcher calls. So I mean, it's possible they between innings they could say, hey, you know what, we're going to go with a little more of these just so he's aware of it. But in general, it's, you know, if the catcher sees that this is not going to be working right, just starts throwing up some different pitches and Estrada will throw them.
So which catcher was it who worked the extra breaking balls last start? Was it Mele or was it Martin?
Not sure. I'll check that quickly, because I was playing during that game. That was the game I remember I was saying I really wanted to go to, but I couldn't.
That'll be interesting to watch if both catchers have the same approach over time, mm-hmm. or if it's one who's noticing it more than the other, or acting on that more than the other.
Yeah, and this is sort of the thing that we saw with him, and it was Mele, by the way, but this is the sort of thing we saw with him with having his personal Deonner Navarro catcher for a long time, right?
Yeah. I feel like Nick... We've left Nick out of this entirely.
Hey, Nick got his chance to talk about Estrada too much that time when I wasn't here.
Yeah, I'm sure you did not like what I had to say either. So.
Truth hurts sometimes. That's all it is. That's all.
Like,
it
I've
is.
Been harsh on the guy this time, this season a bit too. So,
the question, well, I guess for Nick is: does this mean Marco Estrada now has trade value? Because you could argue that's like four starts in a row where he has been above average.
Right. And so while you guys were talking, I actually did a quick little split search of pitchers since June 1st. And Estrada is, I think, fifth or sixth in ERA at 1.45. But I mean, just very quickly, other pitchers with ERAs under two in that span: Tyler Skaggs, Zach Eflin, Mike Montgomery, Tyler Molly. It is a very small stretch of starts. And I think I'm hopeful that he's turning it around, but I think given how much he's struggled the last year and a half, it'd be nice to see some more positive performance. And I think probably other teams are going to need to probably see more than just the four starts too.
It's actually only three.
Right. Yeah,
he got shelled by Boston in the start before that. But no, I agree with that. That's what I was saying. We have to see a few more starts to see if there's actually a trend to this, because you know, before I thought it was just the rising fastball being back was going to thing that matters, but then he threw 6 2/3 shutout against the Nats. So I don't know. Like you said, it's just I think that his trade value is not going to change unless he goes into July with a good string.
So a fun thing for me, they lit up Ryan Madsen for the only two homers he's given up this year. Is that?
Yep.
Yeah, and then they immediately traded for a closer. So the Blue Jays had some influence on something. That's my conclusion. If nothing else, they changed the playoff picture by forcing the Nationals' hand in the bullpen.
The Nationals trade for a reliever every single year.
Because they have a problem reliever every single year.
I mean, if you're Ryan Madsen at this point, are you just having nightmares about facing the Toronto Blue Jays? Do you remember what he was like when he was just a dominant reliever for the Royals, and every time he'd come in to face the Blue Jays, he'd get crushed?
Yeah. Maybe it's a mental thing, or maybe it is by now. It could be. So other players who we are looking at just to celebrate, you know, a good couple of weeks. Randall Grichuk comes to the top of my list. I actually opened up a stats page, Josh, during the podcast. Does that mm-hmm. seem right?
Yeah.
Last 2 weeks, Randall Grichuk's WRC plus, or you know, basically his above league average, is .235.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, he's slugging .784.
That's not his OPS? Oof.
No, that's his slugging. His OPS is almost 1,300.
Wow.
Yeah. And his actual season OPS is up to 718. He's now officially in the positive wins above replacement category.
Oh, there you go.
Almost one win in the last 2 weeks, according to Fangraphs. So,
yeah. By the way, just quickly going back to Mattson, because I just pulled up the stats we were talking about. The second highest OPS of any team against him in his career in the regular season is 868 for the Red Sox. For the Blue Jays, it's 1,005.
Oof.
They own him.
That was a strange game, the 8-6 game, to say the least. Nobody could figure out how to hold off anybody or let anyone get out to that much of a lead. That's the kind of game I think I miss in baseball. And I know there were a lot of home runs in that game, but that sort of back and forth, you didn't know what was going to happen.
And our boy Randall Grichuk, who you were just talking about, had a great game.
Yeah. Was that the two-homer game for him?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's... Grichuk, obviously, do you think he was hurt at the beginning of the year, Nick, and didn't want to tell anybody?
I honestly think this is just kind of the kind of swings that come with his kind of profile. You know, he hits the ball hard, but he swings and misses a lot. And, you know, to quote Homer Simpson, that can lead to some dizzying highs and terrifying lows as a hitter. So I honestly think this is kind of well within the range of Randall Grichuk outcomes that we can expect.
Yeah, and I would agree with that too, because, you know, in this stretch, since he's come off the DL, he's striking out 19.8% of the time, and that's frankly just low for him, and it's low for what he's always been. So just when he's happening to hit the ball, he's, as you said, because he hits the ball so hard, he's going to put up great numbers. And then it's like Kevin Pillar with power is basically what this is.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Kevin Pillar's last 2 weeks while we tread over there?
Can you just make like a horrible sound, like an emoji or something? Or not emoji, but you know what I'm saying, just a fart noise or something.
Kevin Pillar in the last 2 weeks has not walked. He's the only player with any significant number of plate appearances who has not walked. He's hitting 224, 224, 388. Good enough for a 60 WRC plus. That's your everyday center fielder.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this, right? It's this idea that his hot start was, there was nothing different about it. He was doing everything exactly the same. Chase rates, launch angle, everything. But he just happened to hitting a few more barrels. And now his season OPS is 705, which is right where it is for his career.
Yeah, he's just another example of a hitter who's kind of like staying true to kind of his career norms, right? And there's ups and downs with his profile too, based on, yeah, when he can barrel and when he can't.
So are you putting your best outfield out there every day with the impending return of Steve Pierce, let's say, to keep Pillar in center?
No. Randall Grichuk should be the everyday center fielder when Steve Pierce returns. They won't do that, but I mean, Kevin Pillar, we've saw some examples of this week. His defense has slipped noticeably.
Yep.
We saw signs of regression last year, but this year it's significant. He's, you know, DRS is zero. He's a completely neutral center fielder. And, you know, if you're going to have a 285 on base, you better be a plus defender in center. And he's just not that anymore.
So the best outfield is Grichuk in center, Hernandez, as much as it's a bit of a circus, back to right. And then the two guys with no arms platoon in left, Pierce and Granderson, right?
It would be a little ugly at times, but
but if you want to get the runs out of this lineup, if that's still your aim as John Gibbons, I think that's, you know, that's the bullet you'll have to bite in telling Pillar he's not an everyday player anymore. But I think you're right. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, this is actually a curious one. I'll let you handle this one, Nick. But, you know, Pierce coming back will create something of a logjam. They already have a playing time issue now, with Grichuk back, and then Hernandez and Granderson in left, and Kendrys Morales, who in the last month has hit, he's been really, really good. He's 333, 360, 519, so an 879 OPS over the last month. So if he's hitting like that, and then Pierce comes back, what would you do, Nick? Or what do you think they'll do?
Yeah, it's hard. What I think they're going to do is, I think maybe just kind of shuffle in Pierce into the kind of like the DH mix and kind of ease him back slowly, because he has been out for a long time. But what I would do is, I mean, again, it's easy for me to say, I'm not in there, but Pillar does feel to me like the guy who's, he's struggling to put up the same value the other outfielders are. And he's also probably going to be one who's not going to be on the next good Blue Jays team, right? Because he's already in arbitration. They have more control over guys like Grichuk, and you've got to play guys like Granderson and Pierce in case somebody's going to want to trade for them. So that's what I would do, but I think ultimately they're just kind of ease Pierce back slowly and kind of hope that the pieces, something else happens that makes life easier on them.
For some reason, I thought he was actually in his walk year.
Who is this?
Pillar.
No, he just hit his first arbitration season.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. My bad. Same way back there in 2013, but my bad. Yeah. So, I mean, I can see him as a non-tender candidate for sure. The other guy coming back. We talked about Steve Pierce coming back. Marcus Stroman is coming back. We are going to see him against the Angels. What does that mean for the rotation, Nick?
Well, you know, based on the performances, Jaime Garcia would be the one to either lose his job or get moved to the bullpen. But I'm not sure if that's going to be the case. I know I was listening to the radio today, and Ben Nicholson said his sense was that he thought Sam Gaviglio would move to the bullpen to accommodate Stroman's return. So that, if that's the way the team's leaning, we might have to watch another stretch of ugly starts before Garcia figures it out.
Yeah, and you know, I think this is something we're going to talk about some of the trade stuff next. But I think Jaime Garcia is going to really play into that, because you know they're going to need people to make starts, right?
Yep.
They're going to have to. You know, you're not getting anything for Jaime Garcia, would be my guess. He's just been awful. I mean, his ERA is over 6. And he's not getting the ground balls that were his calling card for his entire career. So I think that by having him in there and you're not sending him to the pen, and they have Gaviglia go back and work as the long man that he was doing before, it allows you to put them both into the rotation once they ship some guys out.
Yeah, right. It's a sad thought, but I think you're right. I think, you know, you need 5 starters, and you don't necessarily want to start the service clock on, like, Berucki. So there you go. Any guy with a 6 ERA is kind of cringy every time I think about him taking another turn in the rotation. Did he get through 3
Sam full? Gaviglio will get lots of work as the long man then.
Yeah. Like starter by proxy.
And no, he didn't get through 4. That's why I made that joke on Twitter that the Jays almost averaged 6 innings with their last 2 starts. when Hap almost went 9.
Oh, well, there was that string of quality starts, but you can't have everything when you're not the Red Sox or the Yankees, as it were. Of course, the other question comes is Stroman going to be any good? Because he certainly wasn't any good before he went on the disabled list.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've talked about this before, that Stroman is just going to be up and down unless he changes something in his contact profile, because you know, as a ground ball pitcher who gives up a lot of contact, you're just sort of at the mercy of your defense and luck.
Right. I mean, I would say that even with his profile, I'd say he's a true talent, you know, high 3s to low 4s ERA pitcher. Like, he's not going to get shelled like he was getting shelled the first part of the season. That's even Stroman, as he exists now with his current contact profile, he's not that bad.
No, but just sort of the, you know, like basically the difference between 2016 and 17, right? One was a 4.5-ish ERA, one was 3. And he can really be anywhere in between those, and it wouldn't be a shock.
Exactly, yeah.
Indeed. So the Blue Jays are either going to buy or sell, and it sounds like they have some things worth selling. I assume, gentlemen, we are all in agreement that sell is the reasonable option here. The logical thing to do.
Yeah.
So the two names that I keep hearing and seeing in print, which I will start with, are J-Hap and Ryan Tepera. So I will put it to you, Josh. What do you think the chances are both of those guys getting traded? And what do you think either of those guys might bring back individually?
So I'm saying 75% for both, because I think it's 100% that J-Hap's going to get traded. Well, he just absolutely should. And 50% for Tepera, because the thing that makes Tepera interesting is he's a good reliever. He's not a great one, but he's controllable through 2021 and hasn't hit arbitration yet. So a team can add him while not really increasing payroll, which is a big thing for a lot of teams at the deadline. So, you know, as for what they can bring back, we're talking about the best pitcher on the market. You know, the Cole Hamels and Tyson Ross are fine, but they're not J-Hap. They don't have the J-Hap's track record right now of recent performance or his health. So I think you could be looking at, you know, a very good return. I mean, like something like what we saw with Yu Darvish even last year from the Dodgers, where it's, you know, a legitimate top 100 major league ready prospect and someone else. And I think Tepera, you're looking at a good return too if he's traded because of the control.
Any thoughts on that, Nick?
I'm surprised to hear you think that we could get that much for J.A. Happ. I mean, I'd personally be thrilled if the Jays could get somebody like Willie Calhoun back for Happ. I know this year it seems like it's quite the seller's market. Even the wild card races seem like they're almost already locked up. There's so many teams rebuilding. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it's a buyer's market. Like, there's so many teams rebuilding and so few teams with a legitimate shot at the playoffs. I'd be thrilled if they could get that return. But
that I think that it could still happen is because, unlike, let's say, if you asked me about this for Josh Donaldson, I would say that not even close. But all of these teams, or almost all of them, can use another very good starter for those playoff pushes. And that's where the difference in value comes in, or an elite reliever or a very solid reliever. So there will be a bit of a fight for J-Hap, or at least there should be, among those teams, you know, the 10 or 11 teams that are fighting for playoff spots.
I think even you can look at J-Hap as a guy who will give you quality starts in the playoffs. He's not like a...
Right, that's what I meant.
Yeah, like not just playoff push, but once you get into the playoffs, he's not the guy you drop out of the rotation at the back end. Zon, which I think is what you were trying to say.
Yeah, that's the sort of idea. Like, they can all use boosts to their postseason rotations, to help them get there and to help them win.
I guess the what other wild cards, Nick, do you see in as potential trade chips? Of course, because Happ and Tepera are kind of the obvious ones.
Right. I know we were talking about a bit earlier, but, you know, potentially Granderson or Pierce could be, you know, a nice bench bat for somebody looking to contend. Aside from those two guys, I know that Stroman and Sanchez, their names have been kind of bandied about. If you want to blow up the whole thing, I'd personally not want to do that if I was in charge, just given that I think Stroman and Sanchez's values aren't very high right now. And again, it does seem to be a buyer's market just in terms of the number of teams looking to acquire pitching. So I think, to me, those are the other attractive pieces on this Jays team.
We can't polish up Kamo anymore than we have, right? That's
yeah. So this is the sort of thing I was getting at before with Jaime Garcia, right? You know, when he's going to think who's going to pitch. I think that if they get an offer at all for Axford, Clippard, they got to take it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So this team could look very, very different on August 1st. And we were talking about that thing, like who plays where with Pierce back. I think you're right. One of those guys is going to be dealt.
Yeah. But do you think that there's going to be a market for guys like and Axford? There's a lot of good relievers on bad teams, whether it's, you know, Kirby Yates and Brad Hand on the Padres, Raisel Iglesias on the Reds. I
mean, but you're talking about a very different cost to acquire, right?
Right.
You know, if you want to get Tyler Clippard, you trade for a reliever prospect. Or if you want to get Brad Hand, it's costing you your best two guys.
Right.
So if you're just trying to add depth to your bullpen, those are the type of plays you do. Like, you know, like Joe Smith last year, right? Joe Smith was better than them, but, you know, they got Pannone and oh, it's going to bug me, the middle infielder. But, you know, it didn't seem like a big return, but it was at least useful prospects. And I think that they have to look to do something like that because they're not offering any value to this team as pending free agents.
Right. Well, do you think they could get that, though? Because I don't think that the return the Nationals sent to Kansas City was particularly great for Herrera. There was no one in the top 10, right? That's because
Herrera had $4 million left on his contract.
Didn't Washington keep? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Washington took it all.
Yeah, $4.4 million went onto Washington's coffers, which, you know, that was the trade-off, right? And the Jays, as we've seen from them do last year, and I think we'll see them do this year, they'll eat money if it means getting a better return.
Right.
Because, well, they have their budget for this year, and they're going to spend it. If they don't spend it, it's not like they're getting it back for next year.
Yeah. Well, that's a competitive advantage they might have over some other selling teams.
Mm-hmm. And so this actually sort of leads me to think that the other guy that could be bandied about, Kevin Pillar.
Yeah. I mean, he looks a lot better as a fourth outfielder on a great team where, you know, he can come in, play all three outfield positions. He can make contact, if nothing else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you talked about how the idea of him like being a potential non-tender candidate, that because he doesn't fit with, you know, the next good Blue Jays team, that means sort of the situation that makes him a really good trade candidate because, you know, there might be some team that still thinks he's a defensive center fielder and a guy they can use as a backup, you know, fourth outfielder who they can stick in center and will give you something, because if you're just going to let him go for nothing, it's the same idea as those relievers. You know, get some guys that can be warm bodies for you, because we've seen how much this team needs just general depth.
And if there's any doubt about that, someone did sign Ryan Goins and still employs him after the Blue Jays let him go.
Yeah. Well, Kevin Pillar could be, I remember last year the Astros acquired Cameron Maybin in, was it July or August? But, you know, he could be this year's Maybin, where he just kind of fits in as the supporting outfielder, the fourth outfielder on a good team.
Mm-hmm. All right. Last thing, and I don't think this is going to be affected necessarily by the trade market, but we have a catcher in AAA for once banging on the door, Danny Jansen, and two underperforming catchers at the major league level, one tied to a massive contract and the other is just Luke Maley and has been slowly tumbling back to earth from the heights which he started the season on. What gives here first, I guess, is what I'm thinking, Josh.
Ooh, it's kind of a tough question. I think that some of this will get answered by what they do at the deadline, who moves out, and what positions are still left to fill. Because I could see them going with this super utility Martin and bringing Jansen up. I think they do want Martin on the team with Jansen as a mentor. People scoff at that, but Martin has been one of the better defensive catchers in the game for most of his career. He's obviously on the downswing now, but if there's someone you want your young guy to learn from, it's him.
Fair enough. The super utility Martin is still a hilarious concept for me.
Yeah, it is. It's ridiculous.
But we've got Gio Urshela on the team, so...
Is he still on the roster? Jeez. Like you mentioned, Maley, right, so in his last 15 starts is hitting .122 with a .246 on base and a .224 slugging. So if he keeps doing that, then the other option would be just to get rid of Luke Maley and call up Danny Jansen. Or you try to trade Luke Maley to some team that desperately needs catching and just hope they just look at his career and his season numbers.
And you play Jansen as your everyday quote-unquote catcher and give Martin the extra rest he apparently really needs.
Yeah.
It could happen. We don't know.
I don't think it's unrealistic.
It's just too logical for the Blue Jays to do.
Somebody could get hurt. That's the other thing. I mean, Russ Martin has been on the DL, I think, at last 3 years every year, no? So that could be an opportunity for Jansen to come up without having to reshuffle the roster in any kind of meaningful way, too.
Like the old.
I wonder if they do that, though.
Like the old Russell Peters routine. Somebody going to get hurt real bad.
unless he does get hurt real bad, I don't know if they want to bring up Jansen for a week and send them down.
Yeah.
We shall see. We shall answer your questions in a couple of minutes, so we're going to come right back with that. And after a little breather, we have returned. And, of course, when we return to answer your questions, we pretty much get right down to it. So I'm going to hit it now.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
And our first question is from Colleen Evans at Colleen Evans 6, our most consistent questioner probably at the moment. She says, Mark DeRosa today was talking about Hap's improved fastball command. How do pitchers improve their fastball command? Is it something that all pitchers can aim to do, Josh?
I mean, the answer is yes, all pitchers can aim to do it. As for how, the biggest reason is improving your mechanics so that you get a consistent release point. That's the thing that basically sinks most pitchers. Now, that's not as easy as I made it sound. You know, there are a bunch of things that can go wrong, and athleticism creates ceilings in repeatability, which is why people always look for athletic pitchers. Even you hear this, pitchers aren't athletes, garbage. In the case of Jay Happ specifically, when he went to Pittsburgh with renowned pitching coach Ray Searidge, Searidge tweaked his delivery by changing his stride, by making it more direct towards the plate because his body was a little off center. And when he did that, he found that he started throwing more strikes. And then he combined that with the movement he gets on his fastball when he came to Toronto to get this, you know, this massive difference in vertical movement, which I've talked about a few times. So that was his mechanical and then pitch mix adjustment, which both actually helped the performance and the command by throwing two of them and throwing so often.
But there isn't a Ray Searidge hiding around every corner, is there?
No, and as I mentioned, like, it's a lot easier said than done. I mean, you have to identify a very specific problem, right? You can't just say fix your mechanics, and then they have to be able to fix it, which is also not easy.
I'm curious to know, Josh, before we move on really quick, I know that, like, kind of with the launch angle revolution in hitting, that I know a lot of pitchers have started throwing more high fastballs to kind of counteract the hitters trying to elevate the ball. And Hap seemed to be, at least earlier on this year, doing that as well. Is some of his success not the fact that his command is better, but also he's basically elevating to avoid hitters getting under the ball and hitting as many homers and doubles and things like that too?
I think that that's at least something of a confirmation bias. He's been doing that the last couple of years.
Okay.
When he throws four seamers, he throws them up in the zone.
Right.
And he throws more four seamers than any other pitch. So I think it's just, it sort of fits with the profile of what you just mentioned, like more pitchers are doing it. So you notice it more, but he's actually been doing it ever since he went to Pittsburgh.
Oh, Ray Searidge.
gotta love him. All right. I have a question much more up your alley, Nick, I think, from at Beau Bichette, whose name is Quinn, but we'll figure that out one day. Would you rather suffer with 162 Facebook only broadcasts of 162 games with just Pat Tabler doing the commentary?
Right. Well, I'm going to give an unpopular opinion and say neither the Facebook games or Pat Tabler bother me as much as I think they bother the average Blue Jay fan. I've kind of grown to love Pat's Midwestern Ohio drawl, and as much as he's off base with some of his comments, I've got a big amount of rope for guys who have to talk nonstop on TV for 3.5 hours a night all summer. So I don't mind Pat that much. I'm not saying he's the greatest.
This is the most politician
ever.
Answer ever. Would you rather A or B?
Oh, okay, A or B. You know what? I'll say just I'd rather listen to Tabby, just because Facebook, I think, as a company is pretty and does a lot of not great stuff that's come out in the news in the last, you know, year. And there's probably tons more that is behavior that they're doing. So I'd rather listen to Tabby. How's that for non
bleeps for Greg in that answer?
Greg's madly scribbling what file he's got to get the beat machine out of.
I had to get off the fence, so I wanted to do it in great fashion.
Got off the fence and into the gutter.
To me, the answer is the latter, Pat Tabler, for two reasons. One, the Facebook ones are just, there's too much on the screen. It's just, it I just want to see the game. But also, with there's two things. One, you can mute the commentary if you really don't like Tabler. But also, half of what Tabler says is just a repeat of what Buck Martinez says.
You notice?
So if he's doing it by himself, he'll just be quiet.
Nobody to feed him anything. I would rather listen to Tabby only because the Facebook games are only available on Facebook. And I think that might be the stupidest exclusive marketing deal ever struck in the history of stupid marketing deals. Like, why? I mean, I can't watch them anywhere. I can listen to them on the radio, which is what I would be doing if there were 162 Facebook games.
Right. I will say, in defense of the marketing angle with Facebook, is the one thing Facebook is that a lot of other outlets are not is free. And so I know kind of people from our generation are used to having cable, but I think for a lot of young people, that might be a way for them to watch games that they wouldn't be able to get otherwise. I don't know.
Next question is Kate Stanwyck at OK Stan. Between Gavilio and Garcia, who should retain the fifth starter role now that Stroman is back? We did talk about this, Josh. Basically, I think we answered what is going to happen. What should happen?
I think the answer is what should happen is what's going to. Where it's Gavilio goes to the pen and Garcia goes, you know, in the rotation. Jays aren't going anywhere, right? Just let Kaimi Garcia pitch, and then at least you have a guy you know can come in and help get you through to the end of a game if one of the other guys gets bounced out early.
Fair enough. Last question from Alex Hume at ahume92. Where did Sanchez's curveball go? He seems to be intentionally avoiding it. I feel odd asking this off the start he just had, but would he be better served as a 100 inning reliever going forward? Wow, I'll take this one because, you know, Sanchez is my guy. Number one, I am 99% convinced that he is still worried that the curveball will aggravate his blister far more than the changeup, and he's had good results with the changeup. So, yes, I think he is intentionally avoiding it, which is a shame because although he did crack it out, was it two starts ago? He brought it out more. But I really liked Hammers and Bullets, and he was only a two-pitch pitcher with the curveball. So, would he be better served as a 100-inning reliever? I don't think so. First of all, I don't think anyone will go down that road with any regularity because it's probably more wear and tear from a team's perspective. Not that it wouldn't be fun, but 200 innings of him is better as a starter.
Yeah. And just to clear up some of the little misconception there. So he was seven curveballs, 13, then eight in his first four starts. Then it was 3-3-2. Since that two curveball start against Tampa on May 5th, he's been in double digits curveballs thrown in six of his eight starts, and the other two were 8-7. So I don't think he's actually avoiding it as much as it seems. He's just not using it as much as he did last year because he has a viable third pitch now.
Yeah, so that changeup is much easier to get to lean on and get results with. So, I think, it doesn't put pressure on his finger the way that the curveball does. I believe there was an article specifically where he mentioned that. Now I don't remember where I read it. So yeah, it's a couple of things, for sure. All right, so that concludes the questions portion of our program, which means that we get to get to the drumroll, please. First ever Brian A. Jackpot. That's satisfying. What is the Brian A. Jackpot? We are going to award the Brian A. Jackpot to whoever. And this person will probably remain anonymous forever because if they come out, they're going to be in big trouble. Whoever released the video of Tom Hallion talking to both Noah Syndergaard and Terry Collins after Syndergaard tried to hit Chase Utley several months after Utley broke the leg of which teammate was it?
Tejada?
Yes, of Tejada at second base in the previous playoffs. First of all, I think the fact that we found out that the umpire's agreement says that if it's not used during the game broadcast, that the video and audio is supposed to be deleted, that might be the most disappointing thing I've ever heard, because it means our odds of getting another one of these videos are super low, and I was terribly entertained. Were you entertained, Josh?
It was awesome. I love hearing how the umpire attempted to defuse that situation. Like, he's saying, look, I understand it, I get it, but, you know, it's like, I have to do this. This is the way it is. Like, just, like, what can you say to that? I mean, it's like, look, it's out of my hands. What do you want to argue?
But the best part is that's not what he said. He taught me a brand new phrase.
Yes, he did. I figured I would leave it for you.
I am amazed that not knowing what this phrase was, out of context, that as soon as he said it, I understood exactly what he meant because he was so animated. He turns to Terry Collins. Well, first he tells Noah Syndergaard, if I don't do something right there, our ass is in the jackpot. Which obviously means exactly what you said. If we don't do something, we are responsible for whatever happens as a result of that, and we're going to take the blame for it. I don't know how he conveyed that much meaning by repeating that phrase like three times. Apparently he did not make that phrase up. Did you know that, Nick?
I've heard jackpot before as kind of to indicate a difficult situation or a problem. So, but the ass is in the jackpot. I hadn't heard that full phrase before.
Someone found it on a TV show. I can't remember if it was The Wire or if it was...
It sounds like something from like Justified or something set in Kentucky. Guess.
It was from a cop show because he was talking about someone from Internal Affairs ratting someone else out. And that's where they found the phrase. Now, obviously, I don't know if Tom Hallian's a fan, but he did definitely take that idea to heart.
I'd say I have to give it to Tom Hallian. You know, I'm always frustrated with umps acting overly aggressively or, you know, making it about themselves. But hearing what Hallian had to say to everybody in that situation, I do think he handled it well. And, you know, kind of not like a lot of the ump behavior that I think we're used to seeing as baseball fans.
Yeah, I think in the situation, he was trying to acknowledge that he knew and everybody knew what the context of him, of Syndergaard trying to hit Utley was, and that pretending that that context didn't exist just because it wasn't said out loud was ridiculous. That everybody in the ballpark knew that Chase Utley had a target on him, and that, and also, you know, Terry Collins is screaming at him, "We need our shot." And throwing in some profanity in there, and Hallian says, "That was it. That was your shot. You missed him." Like, Syndergaard didn't hit him there. It gets worse if I don't do something right now. And he's absolutely right, because that's what we see happening when there aren't ejections right away.
Yeah. So it was cool.
And we'll never see it again. Well, obviously, if one audio slipped through somewhere, that means not everybody is erasing them every time immediately after the game. So it does leave a tiny little crack in the door open for something really interesting to come out. But I don't know if that person wants to risk their job, which apparently is what might be on the line now if they ever figure out who did that.
Yeah.
All right.
Hopefully they don't.
So that brings us to the part of the podcast where I ask for a final thought. Because Josh is generally more prepared for me to ask for a final thought, I will ask you first, Josh. Do you have one tonight?
I do. So I actually ran into Nick at this game, which was nice to see. This was a thing that came up in the Nationals Jays finale on Father's Day. Justin Miller was facing Randall Grichuk, and it was one of those examples of where, you know, with the thing we don't think about too much when you're watching a game, if you're not a pitcher or someone like me, is the pitch sequencing. Randall Grichuk hit a game tying, it was a go ahead single off Justin Miller in the seventh inning of that game. And it was one of those ones where I just couldn't believe what I'd just seen. He was late on about seven straight fastballs, fouling them back. And then Miller decided to throw a hanging slider and he whacked it to center. And it's just, I would love to see a real breakdown of sequencing and how, what kind of order of pitches are leading to hits. Because in that situation, I remember turning to my friend, like, he better not, for his sake, he better not throw a slider because it'll speed up his bat and he'll whack it. And it's exactly what happened. So I would love to do that myself in the capacity, but I hope someone with more, you know, research ability than me does that, because I think it would be really, really interesting.
I think it would be interesting too. It reminds me of some of my one at bat posts that I had done in the past, mm-hmm. where certain times there were strategic situations where the pitcher was unable or unwilling to throw a specific pitch and the batter was aware of that, and it changed the at bat for sure. Nick, final thought.
Yeah, for me, I know the last time that I was on with you guys was just before Pride Night. And I went to the game, had a great time, but I didn't show up early enough to get one of the hats. So anyway, I was, as Josh said, at the game this Sunday, I ran into him and I thought, oh, I should grab one of those Pride hats. Basically, for those of you who didn't see it, it's just a black Blue Jays hat with the logo as rainbow colors. And so I looked at about three different places at the Rogers Center and they didn't have them, which to me is kind of surprising given that there's literally Blue Jays hats with like every odd combination of colors under the sun, you know, from like camo to all black and just a bunch of like there's gray ones. I think they'd be a big hit if they were available to buy either at the game or online. And yeah, I'd recommend the Jays doing that. They were good looking hats, and obviously there's you know, some underlying social significance and importance too. So yeah, Blue Jays, my final thought is make those Pride hats available year round.
Seems like a reasonable thing for them to do. Well, like you said, with a million hats out there, what harm in having the rainbow hat available more?
No. I was ready to buy one.
All right. There's one sale right away. So my fun thought is that Candace Morales, though he has not had the greatest year, he did hit a home run on his birthday this year. And I think probably the best present a guy can give himself is a home run on his birthday. Candace has apparently done that four times in his career, which tells me he's playing on his birthday next year.
Yeah.
Oh, I would like to urge all of you to swing on by www.patreon.com/turfpod. Check out what's going on. You may even figure out why that was named the Brian A. Jackpot if you read some of the descriptions of the awards you can get for donating. That said, this was Artificial Turf Awards episode number 106. I was Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010 and joined by Joshua Housam at Joshua Housam and Nick Dyka at Nick Dyka. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk at you next week.